Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney fix for Wednesday, April 6th, 2016. Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the Dad Show, we're going more in the diversions route because I'm talking today with Tony Castelnova, who's the host of the Disney Parks podcast and author of the book Disney by the Numbers. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about the book.
Excellent, excellent. So just to give people who are listening a little background here, you know, why did you find yourself motivated to collect all of this information that goes into a book called Disney by the Numbers, really devoted to exactly what it sounds like?
Yeah, so it started a long time ago in a far-off galaxy. I was working for Disney at the time. I was a security host at Epcot. This was in the mid to late 90-ish era. And back in those days, kids, there were only five security hosts in the entire Epcot.
Wow.
There were two in the back, two in the front, and one at the turnstiles. And that was it. I mean, it was the good old fun days. But anyway, now you trip over five just getting through a bag check. So back in those days, as a security host or even a cast member, it really didn't matter. There was a book, a little pocket book that they used to give us, and it's called That's a Fact. And I'm holding the original one that kind of started it all for me. I'm holding it in my hand. This one was dated the fall, winter, 1995-96. And on the cover is a park that didn't exist called the Animal Kingdom.
Oh, wow. Okay, so back during the development days of Animal Kingdom, and so presumably this is a booklet they're giving to cast members just to kind of give them some, you know, trivia facts, things that they can use to interact with guests in just sort of off-the-cuff interesting ways.
Yeah, yeah. So if you were walking around and you were, you know, trying to start a conversation with a guest or something, you would have a little book of facts that you can either open up and say, hey, did you know, or things that you might want to memorize. And also in there was a lot of good information on all the, you know, Good Neighbor hotels, their phone numbers, and other important phone numbers. So it had just more than facts in it.
Okay.
But its main purpose was, like you're saying, to be able to kind of help you interact with guests more easily for those that had a hard time doing that.
Yeah, somehow I get the impression that wasn't difficult for you.
It wasn't. It shouldn't be difficult for any cast member. I mean, that's your main job, right?
Right,
is to interact
right.
with. Yeah. So if you have a hard time doing that, probably working at Walt Disney World is not the best fit for you. So I really, you know, I kept them. I have a bunch of them that I held on to, and I said, wow, these are, you know, pretty interesting. You know, I always, as a kid, my first visit was 1976. I was 13 years old. You can do the math on how old I am. And, I was like taken back by, you know, how do they do all this? How do they get all the people here? How does everything move around? God, how many hamburgers are they selling a day? And, you know, how much Coke are they going through? I was interested in how all of this went on. Day after day.
It's interesting, too, that you were struck by that already in, you know, 1976, because those are the days of, you know, one park.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was the Magic Kingdom, and that was it, you know. And, you know, so when I became a cast member, this book kind of, you know, hit it home for me again. You know, after I actually left Florida, I went back to New Jersey, where we originally came from. And the History Channel shows started up. And those was, you know, there was a show for each park, you know, Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and so on. And they had all, you know, as I'm watching, I'm going, gosh, there's a lot of facts in here. I mean, every 5 seconds they were saying a fact. I was like, hold on. So then I started recording these things when they were on VHS back in those days.
Right.
And I would go back and replay them and write down, stop, pause, write it down, the fact that they say, and then write it down. And for a while I was keeping them really in a notebook. And I said, you know, this is crazy. I said, I can't be keeping all these things in a notebook. And I think I still have somewhere that notebook that I was writing all these things that I had chapters for each park, and they weren't really in any order. Then I started keeping them in spreadsheets. I was like, wow. I said, you know, this is a lot of information now. You know, what would I do with it all?
Interesting. So you weren't even doing it on purpose originally, but without even realizing it, you were building a manuscript.
Yeah, yeah. And I just kept on doing it and doing it and doing it until, you know, I was like, you know, I wonder what I should do with all these. And I was watching a podcast back when podcasts were new. There was a guy, actually, I was watching him on television first. His name is Leo Laporte. He's still out there. He does Twit TV.
Right, right.
I blame him and Adam Curry for podcasting. and probably my addiction to both now. So Leo had on this show, Call for Help, and each week he had like a segment on like new software. And there was this application called Rapid Weaver, and it was for knuckleheads like me who wanted to do a website but had no website skills at all. So it was only for an Apple computer, and the premise was you would get these themes that would come with the application, and then you could buy other little plugins if you needed them for different utilities and things like that. But basically, you just type the stuff, and then you hit a publish button, and as long as you had a domain, boom, it was done. It would create a website.
I remember Rapid Weaver. It was basically the first of the, you know, supposed to be easy to use, what you see is what you get editor for web publishing.
Correct.
At least that's the way they pitched it. I don't know that it ever really worked that way, but that's the theory.
I still use it today.
Okay.
So as crazy that is, yes, there's a lot of developers out there creating a huge amount of themes and plugins and stacks and all this other stuff for the application. Anyway, that's not a publishing podcast. So I figured, all right, let me put up a website. I put up a website, and I thought, well, you know, if people go to it, so be it. If not, at least my content and all these crazy facts are out there. I kept adding more as I kept finding more. And then it really started and then getting into research. And now I got like this huge collection of books. I would go to the library and find different books that had more information and more facts type things in it. Some of them were, you know, travel guides. Some of them were, you know, books by Disney or Imagineering or things like that. So I really started digging into it. I just started creating more and more and more and more. I was like, wow. Kept publishing everything to the website. And finally, I said, maybe there's something more I could do with them. Sure. And for years, I would send out letters to, you know, various book publishers and say, hey, listen, here is a chapter of what I think is a great book. You know, here's my content. Here's where to contact me. I actually got a book on how to write
how to get a book published.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I was following all the guidelines in there, and I would get literally rejection after rejection letter saying, you know, this is not for us. It's just facts. There's no story. Who the hell would buy that? Blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, you know, maybe a website is all this thing could be. And I'm fine with that. More and more people were using it. I was getting letters from or emails from college and high school kids. Hey, I was using, you know, your content for a thesis on parks or theme parks or attractions. You know, so I said, well, you know what? People are using this stuff. It's not just,
I mean, it wasn't a book, but you were already sort of building a niche as a legitimate research source.
Yeah. So I said, well, you know, if people are using it, people are enjoying it, I figured why not? And one of the rules for the website was everything had to start with a number. So when you're writing a book, you know, starting a sentence with a number is not a very easy task to try and make that sentence, if you can even call it that, even sound or look or feel like a sentence, you know.
Right, because it makes publishers cranky because it violates their style guides.
Exactly, exactly. And that's probably what was driving the book publishers crazy. I came to kind of speed up a little bit. Jim Corcus writes many, many books. If you've never gotten any Jim's books, shame on you. He's a great author and storyteller and historian. And, you know, he's really trying to keep the Disney history alive.
Right.
You
know, yeah, I mean, we've mentioned Jim before, but it bears repeating because, you know, Jim Corcus is probably one of the most prolific of the, you know, people who, especially in the early days of Walt Disney World, sort of was up to his elbows in it and has been, you know, sharing really the oral history of Walt Disney World.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we try to do on our podcast, you know, we try to do interviews, but we, you know, we want to tell people's stories of, you know, these people that may not be here. You know, time is running out for some of these folks. You know, Alice Davis is old. Raleigh Crump is old. Bob Gurr is old. I don't want to say that, but, you know, the clock is ticking on some of these stories. And, you know, if you don't have them tell their story, you know, when they're gone, it's over. The story's gone. So, so I saw where he was publishing his books, and I said, wow, well, you know, this guy is only publishing Disney books. And I sent my book, and I said, well, you know, it's just going to be another rejection letter. You know, this guy's going to email me back. Yeah, thanks for that, but that's really stupid, dude. Thanks for doing that.
You'd already steeled yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, why not? But, you know, he actually said yes. I was like, what? So he says, well, how much of the book do you have written? I said, dude, I've been doing this for 7 years. It's written. I said, all I need is someplace to put it, and we're done. And I sent him, you know, we worked on it for almost a year, you know, cutting out things that don't exist anymore. He figured, you know, nobody would be interested in those, and I kind of disagree, but, you know,
but,
so
extinct. But giving yourself a little focus on, you know, current attractions, current places, current, basically numbers that would reflect the current park.
And that's really subjective because, I mean, what's current the moment the book was published is not current today.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's actually, it was one of those things in the back of my mind to come back to and talk about later, but maybe this is the time to do it, which is, it's interesting to me that you were having this in the middle of this sort of search for a publisher and you had the website already and you were looking for somebody willing to do this in hard copy. And in my personal history at that same time, roughly, I was doing some database administration work for a chain of hospitals. And they had me basically coordinating a database. They were in an acquisition mode. They were buying a bunch of other hospitals. And so we were compiling this database of the services that were offered at each of their facilities and who was running them. And it was, you know, a lot of very specific detail facts that we were gathering together. And they had me gathering it together and then publishing it to discs and then sending out discs.
Wow.
And I was having with them almost the opposite conversation because, right, this is the fairly early days of mass adoption of the World Wide Web. And
right.
I was telling them, look, it doesn't make any sense for us to be doing this on disk. This needs to be a web project because it's constantly changing and there's no way to keep up.
Right.
So I essentially made myself obsolete and lost that job ultimately because they killed the project. but I was right. So,
yeah.
So you were going the other direction, and I just find that really interesting about how you figured out a way to take what was dynamic data for you on a website and find a way to crystallize it into a book.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, in the digital world that we're living in today, I mean, does somebody really want to carry a book around the parks? I mean, We're lucky we can get them to carry a smartphone. I think books are kind of going away. Listen, there is a digital Kindle version of the book, so yes, you can have it on your smartphone. I have an app that has an abbreviated version of some of the facts, if you want that for free too. So there are other ways to get this information than the book. But the book is really, I think there's a lot of people like me who want the tactile. I want to sit with a book and flip through these things and maybe highlight and circle things and, you know, do whatever with it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it the thing that came to mind for me immediately thinking about this book is this is the perfect thing to put in a kid's hands, you know, when you first get on the plane.
Right.
To go to Walt Disney World or you get in the car to start your drive, because nothing like that, you know, first of all, it's tactile, keeps their hands busy. And second of all, it gets them in that mindset, you know, right away in an engaging way.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I just recently went to the park with my niece and my nephew, and I was telling them, you know, some facts, you know, from the book, obviously. And they're like, wow, that's great. You know, they thought I was like a rocket scientist, like I was, you know, super uncle. I knew all these, you know, these interesting things. Well, tell us about that. Tell us about that. You know, and then they were like, tell us more about that. You know, so, hey, if you want to be a super dad or a super uncle or super aunt or whatever, you know, maybe telling them some facts is not a bad idea. You know, you get the kids engaged and also thinking, you know. I mean, there's like that crazy, stupid trivia question. You know, how many, you know, bricks are in the castle? It's none. It's poured concrete.
Yeah, right.
But in the book, we could tell you how many tons of concrete and steel are in there, which, is really the question you should be asking the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I think a book is I like books. I like the tactile, you know, I need to hold it and touch it and read it kind of thing. So.
Right. No, I mean, I think that's exactly the point. I think that there's certainly still a role for as people derisively call them sometimes, dead tree books. But yeah. I really do think that there's still a role for a paper, you know, a book that you can hold in your hand,
right,
that you can take with you in the car or on a plane and not worry about whether you have an internet connection to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Cue lines, all those kind of things. So Bob published it, and it's at Theme Park Press. You can buy it there. You can buy it on Amazon. Or if you want it signed, you can get it from my website. But, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, yes, there'll be other versions of this. There'll be, you know, I almost have a Disneyland version completed because, you know, while I was doing Disney World, I was also doing Disneyland. It just seems, you know, natural.
Right. The logical sequel.
Yeah. Disneyland is a little tougher because, and everybody says to me, tougher? Or? It's older, so there should be more information about it. And really, there's not, because Disney, the company, really didn't keep track or their press sites and their books and their things were more of the making of the Disneyland and not so much of telling the, you know, the behind-the-scenes fact stuff of Disneyland.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense, because when they were building Disneyland, nobody understood that there would be this much interest in
Correct. The
building of peace.
Right. I mean, there's a behind-the-scenes and, you know, the nickel tour, and there are some really hard-to-get expensive books that are out there that would probably, you know, help. But some of them are very rare. Some of them are very expensive nowadays. I think the nickel tour of Disneyland is now, you know, if you look on like eBay or half.com or someplace like that, it's like $200 for that book.
Wow.
Which would probably have a lot of great information in it of, you know, the 1955-ish version of Disneyland. So it's tough, though. It's
right,
tough.
Right.
So,
well, because they're rare books now. I mean, they're collector's
yeah.
items. They're not generally available anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it may be as old as 60 years. I'm not sure the published date. It's probably more like 56, 57, but, you know, it's probably close to almost 60 years old, the book. So,
right.
You know, it's tough. But hopefully there'll be a Disneyland version. Hopefully maybe I'll do like a little cruise line. I would love to be able someday get enough facts of all of the parks, like Paris, Shanghai, Tokyo, and so on. You know,
because it would give you a really great excuse to, you know, go visit Tokyo and Shanghai.
It would give me a great reason to go there. The other thing I was doing on my website was kind of this timeline premise. Gosh, I can't even remember what I even call it now on the website. But I was almost thinking about a timeline, a chronological timeline of things that has happened since the company was inception to current day. And you would see, you know, when parks opened, when attractions closed,
oh, okay.
When shows started, you know, almost like you can pull out a pullout sheet out of a book, and you can almost do it, say, maybe by decade.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like grand, here's the 20s, here's the 30s.
Grand timeline things. The thing that comes to my mind are the ones that we probably used back in, like, elementary school when we were first introduced to, you know, dinosaurs and the fossil record, right?
Because exactly.
You unfold that
exactly.
thing and you can see which dinosaurs went into which era. And
Right. So that's a book that I'd love to see myself get done. You know, when characters were introduced and, you know, when different legends and luminaries of the Disney world, you know, came into play, were hired, maybe fired, maybe left, whatever.
Sure.
So that's a lot of information to gather. I've started some of it, but, you know, how far? I mean, where do you stop? You know, I keep saying, well, we can add this, we can add this, we can add this. You know, soon it'll be, you know, like the encyclopedias. You know, it'll be 3 feet high, and you won't be able to carry it anywhere.
Right. Well, I mean, that's always the problem with this kind of project, really any history project, is that you have to have sort of parameters for yourself because you can go sort of infinitely in either direction.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I probably need somebody, a publisher, to tell me, here's the scope. Keep it within this little circle of influence.
Right.
Don't go outside of this little circle here. You know, just do these things. And that would probably be a good idea because I get these crazy ideas and just keep running with them until somebody tells me, you should probably stop. That's probably a little bit too far for that.
Right. This is a period. Put a period on
it. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'll just keep going. So that's really the short Reader's Digest version.
Right.
The story.
So give people, I mean, we've kind of talked in generalities, you know, great kind of background on the book. What are some examples of the kinds of numbers that we're going to find in the Disney by the Numbers book?
All right, let's, I have the book. Let's see, let's flip to a page here. All right, let's see. All right, how about something about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Okay.
So this is actually one item that did stay in here, even though it is extinct, and probably just because of its popularity. There were 11.5 million gallons of water that was used at that attraction.
Wow, that's a lot of water.
That seems like a lot of water. Let's see, flip to say something here. Oh, Cinderella Castle Suite. Let's see. There are 30,000 tiles on the Cinderella coach mosaic on the tile floor in the bathroom.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, very specific, very detailed, but
yeah.
Like interesting numbers to make you go, huh?
Yeah. Huh? Have you ever seen the Cinderella Castle Suite?
I've seen pictures
probably,
you know, here and there, but
yeah.
But
yeah.
That was it.
There was a D23 event. Whew, gosh, a long time ago. It was the merriment event that happened at Christmas time.
Okay.
And part of that was we were allowed, you ready for this? Brace yourself. 2.5 minutes in the Cinderella Castle Suite.
Wow. So, you know, take your time.
Take your time. Look around. It was, they took, because it only could hold a small amount of people. It's a very small, very, very small, probably smaller than a value resort.
Okay, so less than 260
that.
Square feet. See, I know a few numbers myself.
Yeah, it's very small. It's two queen-size beds a little TV room that has a day bed in it and a bathroom, and that is it.
Okay. Okay.
So they allowed, I think, six of us or eight of us up at a time. I think it's probably around six. And you were allowed 2.5 minutes. So let me tell you, every blogger and their mama, all we were doing was, get out of my way. I'm trying to take a picture. Get out of my way. I'm trying to take a picture. You're in my shot. Get out. Duck down. Get down. Stand up. You know, it was the craziest 2.5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
You were trying to take as many pictures as you possibly could because you knew you were never going to see it again.
Right, right. Wow. That's pretty intense. And you know, clearly they're moving you through fast, part, you know, if nothing else, because they've got a lot of people and not a lot of space. And, you know, it's your basic attraction capacity problem.
Yeah. And they there was a couple of hundred of us. We all had to get through it. They had to have us out by a certain time. We weren't allowed to touch anything, sit on anything. But they had to have us out by a certain time so that housekeeping can go in and just vacuum up. Take our fingerprints off all the furniture that, you know, people touched when they weren't supposed to, and just make sure the room was just, you know, in good shape, you know, for guests that were going to be staying there that night, because it was being used. So it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I even have a couple years of like food and wine facts in here, and flower and garden. You can find out, you know, like how many glasses they use at food and wine, and how many forks and napkins and things like that that they use. I do have a small section for each park, you know, with some extinct attractions, too.
Okay.
Some
history stuff in there, too, then. Just
yeah,
sort
some
of,
history. Yeah, because I kind of like the history things, too. I mean, the first attraction I ever went on was If You Had Wings. And, you know, I always look for pictures of that or, you know, the music or even video of it, because it's so rare to see that, you know. I'm like,
right.
I want to see it again. I want to be in it again. I just met a friend through a mutual friend, someone who was back in Buzz Lightyear, what's Buzz Lightyear now, and he was at the time working as an engineer for Disney, not an Imagineer, but an engineer.
Okay.
And he was back doing some work, and he found this huge mural that used to be in the attractions, If You Had Wings.
Oh, cool.
And he found that nobody was doing anything with it. So he got permission to put it in his office.
Oh, nice.
And he pulls up this picture. We were talking about the attraction. I was like, oh, I love that attraction. But he goes, oh, hold on. And he goes through his phone. He goes, oh, like this? I said, what the? Where did you get that? Where is that? What is that? He's like, that used to be in my office. You know, I'm like, what? He says, yeah. He goes, it was sitting back there. Nobody was using it. The only thing was he had to tell, I think, property management where it was. So in case somebody ever was looking for it, they would know where
to go find it.
Yeah, they could track it down and find it. And he says, yeah, I sat in my office. He goes, now who's ever in my office maybe has it, or maybe they've gotten rid of it.
And it could be back in a warehouse somewhere again.
I said, well, if you could hunt it down and find it, I said, I'd like to get it. So I'm hoping I see it somewhere, you know, that I can get my hands on it. Right. I'll pay for it. if you're listening, Disney, I'll buy it.
There you go. The bidding starts at.
Yeah. I don't care, $5, $1, $10, whatever.
So, okay, so that's the book, and that is sort of the piece that got you here, that got us talking initially. You're also a host of the Disney Parks podcast. And
yep.
Why don't you talk a little bit about the podcast and sort of where that came in, right? You started with the book and then you got into the podcasting. How'd you get into it and why do you do it?
Yeah, so that was interesting. You know, I had listened to, like I said, Leo Laporte and Adam Curry and all these other people doing podcasts. You know, even back in the day when Lou Mangiello was doing a podcast, I can't think of his name, from his basement.
Oh, right.
You know, from a coffee table in his basement. So I've been listening to podcasts for a while. I was like, you know, I wonder if there's a, you know, maybe you should just do it. You know, we could talk about news, we could talk about parks. So we decided to come up with the premise that we, you know, we call it the Disney Parks Podcast. We talk about all the parks, not just, you know, Walt Disney World or Disneyland. So we try to get news from all of the parks. The international ones are a little bit tougher.
Sure.
They don't seem to have as much things happening as we do, which I know that sounds weird, but
yeah, I mean, I always wonder whether it's really true that they have less going on, or if it's just a matter of, you know, they talk about it in French or they talk about it in, you know, Chinese, and so it's not published in any way that, you know, Westerners are going to pick up on it.
Yeah. So we have access to their public relations site, which we do for the domestic parks, but, right, you know, their stories are maybe one a month, where ours is like, you know, three a day. So,
right. Well, that's true.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, gosh, are they doing anything over those parks? we started with some people that were local, and then, you know, it's tough to get them to do it consistently. And, you know, people come, people go, their schedules change, things like that.
Right.
So we do that. We do news. Once a week is a news show. And then the second show we do is kind of like the show I'm on right now. We interview people. We talk to all the podcasters. We talk to books, and we do interviews. We've had on, thank God, luckily, some very interesting and great people. We've had on Margaret Carey. We've had on Bob Gurr. We've had on Pat Carroll, my all-time favorite guest of all time, who, you know, did the voice of Ursula. If you don't know, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but I'll say it. We've had on like Wally Crump. We've had on some great, you know, Disney people. I would love to have on more, you know, I'm going to use my air quotes, old-timers, because right. I think they're the most fascinating, and they have, you know, they're great storytellers. And one thing about them is, I mean, like Pat Carroll, I literally, she spoke for an hour, and I think maybe we asked her about two questions.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a combination of the fact that those folks are sort of by nature inherently storytellers already.
Right.
And you couple that with the fact that they're getting this opportunity to talk about something they love, and they've been talking about it for a number of years. And I think it's great, because, you know, once you start talking to them, it just starts flowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of them have great stories to tell. You know, some of them could be about Disney. Some of them could just be, you know, personal things in their lives, which are, it's still fun. It's still entertaining because they just tell a good story.
Right, right.
We were just talking to Dean Gashler. You should probably try and have him on. He wrote a book, I Led the Parade. So for the past 14 years, he just recently retired. He was the person that picked the Grand Marshal for the 3 o'clock parade.
Okay. We have a couple of guys who've lucked into that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's the guy who went around and tried to find, you know, the perfect family to sit in the car, for 14 years. You know, he worked 5 days a week. He had 2 days off. He thinks he did around 7,000 guests, wow, that he's met in his 14-year career. And the crazier part of the whole thing, and if you know any cast members, he worked, he first started in the Harmony Barbershop for 7 years and then went to Grand Marshal coordinator. So literally his entire career was on Main Street in one park. And that that never happens. You never...
No, no. People always get moved around.
Yeah, you never stay in one place, never mind one park. So he's an anomaly to the whole Disney, cast member thing. So, you know, if you're looking for a job at Disney, that doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah, no, I even people I know who, you know, were in the college program and didn't even last very long in the college program get bounced around.
Oh yeah. They probably get beat up the most, because they're just cheap labor,
right,
from Disney's perspective. But, yeah, so we do two shows a week. You know, we're on all the the normal platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, Upcast, Sidecast, you know, whatever, wherever you get your podcast from. We're even on a UK radio station on Sundays.
Cool. Now, how did that happen?
Yeah, so we got this email saying, hey, we want to put your show on the radio. We're like, it's an online radio. And we're like, okay. And we're looking at the radio station, and it's all rock shows 24 hours a day. And then all of a sudden on Sunday, bing, like the Disney Parks podcast shows up. These people are going, what happened to the radio? What happened to the internet? Did it break? So it's crazy. We're getting, we send them our MP3 and then they put it on.
Right.
So we're not getting, you know, direct statistics, but what they're sending us of the hits is like, holy mackerel. It's huge. We're huge in London.
That's awesome.
And we're also on Sorcerer Radio on Saturday. So on Sundays, you can find us on a UK radio station. On Saturdays, you can find us on Sorcerer Radio, Okay. Which makes a lot more sense.
It does, maybe a little more logical, but logic has never gotten in the way.
Yeah. So we're trying to get our podcast in maybe unique in different places, that people can find it. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy the podcast because it's me and my co-host, John Donahue. He goes by Park Hopper John because he's got a website, WD Park Hoppers.
Okay.
So that's kind of his, moniker over there.
Right.
And, it started out me and John left. Then it was me, Kathy's daughter, and then Kathy's daughter left, and John's wife came on, Sarah, then Sarah left, Krista came. It's been a whole bunch of people. The only person that's been there the whole time is me.
I know how that works. That's sort of the way we intentionally designed our panel show, which is our Sunday show,
right.
Has always been sort of a rotating rotating cast of rogues because for a lot of the same reasons, we kind of decided right off the bat that it was difficult to get one set group of people who were going to be able to be available every weekend. So, or every week to record. So what we do is come up with topics, throw them out. And then I've got people from the community who volunteer to be on the show. And I think at last count, and the count's about a year old, so the numbers are bigger, but I'm flunking my Disney by the numbers for our own show. But at last count, we were at 80 different guys from the community.
Wow.
Who had, been in a panel host role on the show at some point over the last, 4 years. So.
Wow. That's a lot of people.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew, 80 people. Wow. Holy mackerel. That's like the Wheel of Fortune with people. Holy mackerel. I don't know if I'd remember anybody. It's like who's sitting over there now? What's your name?
Yeah, well, this is why the dual screens help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, what do you guys use to record? Do you still use Skype?
We still use Skype to record. Actually, we use a software called Recorder from Ecamm. I think a lot of people use it.
Yep, right.
It's pretty solid. I produce in GarageBand. Just within the last few months, I've sort of upgraded some of our recording technology. I use a mixing board now and upgraded my microphone.
It's podcasting, the one thing I say to John all the time is when this stops becoming fun, I'm out.
Oh, yeah.
I drop the mic and I walk away.
Yeah.
If once it becomes work and things like that, and everybody, I get the question asked a lot of times is, why don't you quit your job like Lou did and just do the podcasting? Because then it's my job, and then it's not a hobby. It's not fun. It's something that I'll have to grind at, like I do my job, in order to make money. And I don't want to be grinding at my hobby. That's why it's a hobby. This is something fun. I can get my crazy Disney thing out without it. Oh, gosh, I got to go record that podcast again. I don't ever want to have to say that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I will say the one thing I can give the guys credit for is that, one of the things that has, I think, made it so that in 5 years of this, I've really, you know, never felt like, oh, gee, I got to record.
Yeah,
right. And I think the biggest reason is exactly that, you know, aspect of having so many different people participating, because it's really energizing to have,
yeah.
You know, such a nice broad community of folks, you know, pitching in. Because if nothing else, I get to talk to a friend that I probably haven't talked to in a while, you know, when we podcast together.
Yeah, yeah, it's perfect. You know, we've done this thing with our podcast where we record Tuesdays, but we're probably going to be moving it to Monday. Anyway, we use a Blab IM, so it's BLAB.IM.
Right, yeah.
And it allows you to do video, you know, live to the internet. And you can then bring on, well, for us, two other people. You got four people talking in the little, you know, Brady Bunch type window,
mm-hmm.
As we've kind of called it. And then there's people that can be chatting and watching, and then people can leave and leave the seat, and then other people come into the seat. It's kind of fun. We even found a WordPress plugin that we don't even have to send them to Blab. They just go to, you know, Disney Parks Podcast /live, and it's right there on our site. And the other great part is once you're done recording, Blab sends you an email, and on it's got two links, one for just the audio and one for just the video. And you can take that and turn it into the podcast, which we do. On top of that, you can go to your replay page and hit upload to YouTube, and it takes the entire video and shoots it up to YouTube. Wow. And you're done. So we've kind of been using this for our new show. For the interview, it's hard to get, you know.
Right. Well, that was the fun.
Somebody like Bob Gurr to get on Blab.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for us, you know, we've been doing Skype and we've been doing audio only for a long time. And originally, part of it has been because I have issues with Time Warner, my internet provider.
Sure.
I live in the donut hole of the Google Fiber coverage in Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
Drives me insane. But I could hear the guys working in the street this morning.
Yeah.
So I know that you know, we should have coverage soon, and I can't wait.
I would go out and buy them lunch.
Yeah. Yeah,
I will buy you lunch if you run that wire right to my house right now.
Yeah, I mean, it really made a big difference going to audio only. The quality of the audio we were getting was getting degraded because my internet connection was not reliable enough. It's been better lately, so we probably could get away with it. For a while there, I didn't want to change it. If for no other reason, because I'd gotten into the habit I had set up a mic on a boom arm, mm-hmm. so that it was right off to the side of my recliner, and I could record in the recliner on my laptop with the boom mic. And it was really lazy and comfortable. I have stopped doing that. I now record from my desk. It you know, with the better quality microphone, it works better this way. And I, you know, our sound quality is better, but, you know, so I could probably consider doing it again. At the time, half the time, I didn't even turn the lights on.
That's what podcasting
can be. Why would I
want
to have to turn lights on?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting in the dark right now.
Well, see, there you go. It's hard to do a video component when you're doing it in the dark, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And, you know, listen, for all the women out there, there's nothing against women, but all the women that we ever have on always want to put on makeup and do their hair. And I'm like, it's a podcast. You know that, right? We'll be lucky if we can get 15 people to watch the video.
Right. Yeah. We've joked about the fact that, you know, one of the reasons that we do audio only is because if we did video, we'd have to put on pants.
You could be, listen, I've been on some video calls at work. I haven't had pants on. I'm just saying.
Just be careful how you aim your camera.
You just don't want to get up and answer the door while
right.
that's happening.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's been fun. I enjoy the podcasting. Like I said, if it ever gets boring, I'm out. Yeah. Drop the mic and walk away.
Well, and listeners can hear it too, you know?
Yeah.
People can hear when you're having fun. And I think that it makes a big difference too in terms of the you know, whether people enjoy listening to you. Because if you don't enjoy doing it, they don't enjoy listening.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to have some kind of camaraderie, too, with the person that you're doing with. Because that also, I think, comes through.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people can tell, you know, if the two of you are having fun or just one person's having fun. So that's right. Also, right. You know, a good thing. So.
All right. Well, you know, Tony, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Your enthusiasm for just sharing Disney knowledge and the Disney community is really infectious. And so I hope people do check out your website, Disney by the Numbers, and the Disney Parks podcast. Great sources of information and, you know, great way to another source for really sort of being jacked into the Disney online community, which is a fun place to be.
Yeah. And if you, you know, do a contest for your listeners,
okay.
I will send somebody a free copy of the book.
Excellent. All right. So I think I came up with it as we were talking. So here's what the contest is going to be. When the podcast publishes on, you know, Wednesday, April 6th, it'll publish on, you know, on our website. We publish it on Facebook as well. It'll be there available. And so you can comment on the blog. You can comment on Facebook, either place. You get one comment per person. So one entry per person. Post your favorite Disney numerical fact, and that's your entry.
That sounds good.
All right, and then we'll randomly draw from those Disney facts for your own copy of Disney by the Numbers by Tony Castellanova.
Sounds good to me. I love it.
All right. So, again, wonderful talking to you, Tony, and we'll be listening for your next show.
All right. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings. Eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.